Yes, great. All right. Well, good morning and welcome to this calendar of the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Thank you for accommodating me. I was the one who was exposed to COVID and I'm still testing negative, but I just wanted to keep everybody safe. So thank you for accommodating this quick switch. We have six cases on our calendar today, including three oral matters and three non-oral matters. Marshall, do you want to call the court to order and call our first case?
Yes. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Chief Judge Siegel, Judge Gaetis, Judge Halberks. The Honorable Susan L. Siegel presiding. Calling case A220607, Aguilar versus American Indian Community Development Corporation.
Great. You're ready, you can start to proceed. Just introduce yourself at the start of your argument. And as I know you know, but I will repeat regardless, appellant has 15 minutes and respondent has 15 minutes, and then appellant has 5 minutes for rebuttal. So please start when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, and may it please the court. Caroline Brunko on behalf of appellant Hennepin County. As this court is well aware from the briefing, this case involves a young man who was seriously injured after leaving the AICDC detox facility where he was a patient. Hennepin County brought this interlocutory appeal on two narrow issues following the district court's ruling that Aguilar's medical negligence claim against both the county and the operator of the detox facility survived summary judgment. This court should reverse the district court's ruling because Hennepin County is immune from suit on Mr. Aguilar's medical negligence claim. This is true for two reasons. The first is that Hennepin County is entitled to vicarious immunity for any allegation against an individual Hennepin County employee that would otherwise be entitled to official immunity. The only conduct that Mr. Aguilar alleges in his complaint against a specific Hennepin County employee involves an unnamed security officer who allegedly allowed Mr. Aguilar to leave the building where the AIC detox facility is located. And that officer would be entitled to official immunity. Yes, Your Honor.
So Ms. Brunko, though, so a question I've got is, can't the county be held vicariously liable? I mean, AICDC is the county's agent. So why are we just focused on the security guard?
Your Honor, first of all, AICDC is not Hennepin County's agent. It's Hennepin County's independent contractor. Any AICDC employee would be subject.
Isn't a contractor an agent? No. I mean, what case law are you relying on to say that the county's not responsible?
Go ahead. I'm relying on the contract itself and the contractual relationship that was negotiated between Hennepin County and AICDC. I'm not relying on any case law for that. Hennepin County specifically structured its program when it contracted with AICDC and identified AICDC within that contract as its independent contractor. Who had the expertise to operate this detox facility and would be responsible and would indemnify Hennepin County for any act or omission of negligence by its employees.
So are you saying, Ms. Brunko, that then eliminates the duty that the county has to keep civilly committed individuals safe, their statutory duty?
I'm just speaking to the issue of official immunity at the moment. I'm not speaking to the merits of the medical negligence claim when I say that the only Hennepin County employee that's at issue in this case, when we're talking about what the challenge government conduct and whether or not that action was discretionary, involves this unnamed security guard. Statutory immunity would apply to the greater systemic policy formulation issues. But as it relates to official immunity only, I am saying that the only Hennepin County employee involved is the security guard.
And I know that was really the focus of your briefing, I think, not only to this court, but to the district court. But I did not see anything in your brief that talks about the evidence in the record that that employee exercised discretion. You assert that, but it seems conclusory to me. What evidence is there of any discretionary conduct on that person's part?
Your Honor, the security guard encountered Mr. Aguilar in a public building, in a public stairwell, wearing street clothes, not behaving in any dangerous or suspicious way. And there had been no call from AICDC to that security officer to inform him or her that there had been a patient that was missing without authorization. Within that 45-second interaction that plaintiff alleges he encountered that security guard, the security guard made the decision not to stop that member of the public from leaving the building. And that that is a discretionary act for which official immunity would attach.
So was there a deposition taken of that person and he testified that he actually considered whether or not to stop Mr. Aguilar?
There was a deposition of Mr. Aguilar where Mr. Aguilar spoke to the situation that happened. There was a deposition of the security officer, but the security officer has no knowledge of this incident taking place.
So he didn't really make a judgment call in the moment, is what I'm hearing you say. No, that's all right. I mean, he saw Mr. Aguilar on his way out of the building, but it doesn't sound like there was any judgment exercised.
At this juncture on summary judgment, all facts are, as alleged by the plaintiff, are assumed. To the extent that this interaction happened and there was an interaction between a security officer and Mr. Aguilar, the totality of the circumstances is what Hennepin County is relying on to say that, as described by Mr. Aguilar, to say that this would have been a discretionary act. But it is true that from May 17th, 2018, the memory of this happening to the extent that it happened is not something that the security officer we believe to have been involved in the situation recalls making a discretionary decision.
So his testimony was that he just didn't recall this incident at all. Like he could not remember it from any other thing that happened that day. I mean, is that what he testified about in his deposition?
That is his testimony. I would add that, again, at this juncture, all facts have to be assumed as pled by plaintiff. That there is a question whether or not this interaction took place.
Well, I just have a question about that. Perhaps you can help me, because yes, all facts have to be assumed, but when we're looking at immunity de novo, we're looking at the conduct to make a determination. And typically, most records have some evidence of, you know, some type of, you know, policy. I realize the next one is more policy, but, you know, some discretion, some how somebody was trained, so therefore how they might react. I mean, I just don't see anything like that here. And don't we need that in order to address the conduct and make this immunity analysis?
So as the Wiederholt case says, whether or not an individual is named does not mean that the county cannot assert official immunity and vicarious immunity for any challenged government conduct involving an individual employee. It is difficult in this situation because the plaintiff has not made an allegation against a named security officer, and the county can only rely on what the plaintiff testified to what happened. It is confusing, and it is confusing in the medical negligence claim context that we're talking about a 45-second interaction between a security officer who may or may not have encountered plaintiff in a public stairwell and allowed Mr. Aguilar to leave through a public door.
But isn't it your argument, Ms. Brunkow, that the court needs to focus on the conduct of the security guard? Isn't that your claim about the sort of conduct at issue for the purpose of immunity?
For the purpose of official immunity, as it attaches to any specific individual county employee, it is our argument that to the extent that conduct of the security officer, as it's been alleged, that I've listed the conduct as it's been alleged, that official immunity would attach to that, because that would have been a discretionary decision whether or not to allow Mr. Aguilar to leave or not leave, to tackle him on his way out the door, to, you know, that to somehow get in between a member of the public leaving a public building and not leaving a public building. And that because that's the challenge government conduct at issue, for purposes of official immunity only, that would extend to the county under the doctrine of vicarious immunity. And the purpose of that doctrine is to ensure that independent decision-making is not deterred by fear of liability or fear of liability for the government employer. And that this is precisely, as it's been alleged, the kind of situation for which official immunity and vicarious immunity would attach. For the larger policy formulation issues, Hennepin County is entitled to statutory or discretionary immunity, because, as this court knows, policy formulation is protected planning activity, and how, as we see from the Bloss case, how to organize a program is also protected planning level activity. Although there are a number of policies that plaintiff alleges the county should have put in place, this all boils down to the decision to contract with an expert for operation of a detox facility. And that in itself,
but you've got a plaintiff here saying, no, we're not challenging that issue. We're not saying that Hennepin County engaged in any wrongful conduct, negligence, common or medical, in connection with that decision. And what it seems like the district court judge focused on is that there are issues of fact, not that there may be particular things. I mean, the jury could still find that, in fact, the county is entitled to statutory immunity, but there are fact issues here. So can you address the judge's order in that respect?
Absolutely. Whether statutory immunity applies is a legal issue. There is no dispute between the parties that Hennepin County did not maintain operational control over AICDC's detox facility. The allegation is that Hennepin County should have, and that Hennepin County should have put policies in place outside of the bevy of state rules and regulations that are required for a licensed expert to operate a detox facility. The correct analysis.
So the janitor, I mean, that is a contractor of, or the service, janitorial service, not this individual. That contract is with the county, correct?
That contract is with the county.
Yeah, and there's evidence in the record that this janitor who'd worked there for quite a long time had no training with regard to dealing with locked facilities. I mean, so why is that not part of the county's responsibility as the owner and operator of other parts of the building, if not the leased space within that AICDC operated the detox facility?
To the extent that there were training omissions, that would still be protected by statutory immunity. But AICDC did not have policies in place that it had asked the county to train any independent contractor on. The county's contract with the janitor is with an employee. The janitor is an employee of another organization. So it's still the statutory obligation to ensure that this type of facility is available is what Hennepin County was the county of financial responsibility to ensure was there. But it is not it is not liable for the individual janitor that was at the facility that day.
Hennepin County was making the physical changes to the facility that caused the security camera to be inoperable. That was part of the county's efforts. Am I correct in that?
Hennepin County was involved in a larger construction project. I don't have specific information on what was or was not as far as security hardware operating at that time.
Well, it's undisputed there was a camera that was inoperable that might have otherwise shown this area where Mr. Aguilar left the floor. Or am I incorrect?
I think that that is not a what Hennepin County would say is whether or not there was a camera that was showing footage to the nurses station at AICDC is something that Hennepin County has to rely on AICDC for. So we don't dispute that, no. If there are no other questions, I will reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you very much. Mr. Halpern, why don't you proceed when you're ready?
Thank you, Your Honor, and good morning. And also may it please the court this morning. While the trial court's ruling on summary judgment in this case encompassed a number of different determinations, the district court, Judge Moore, in one aspect of his opinion, denied summary judgment specifically on the issues of official and statutory immunity. Now, I was going to go through the bases for the court's ruling, but I think that's probably unnecessary. I would just say at this point that the district court's denial of summary judgment on the issue of immunity was correct, and respondent requests that this court affirm the judgment of the trial court. I'd like to briefly talk about an overview or give a brief overview of how I see this case, and I think how Judge Moore saw this case. Section 253B.045, subdivision 2, provides that the county must provide for a facility for confinement of individuals like Alex Aguilar. It's part of the civil commitment procedure. On May 7th, 2018, at the request of Alex's Hennepin County case worker, and in response to his multiple attempts to elope, the Fourth District Court entered an order that Alex be held at the 1800 Chicago facility until he could be transferred to an appropriate treatment facility. Everything else in this case, below the duty that's statutory and below the court order, which may have been discretionary decisions, everything else below that is all operational. And
that's not exactly right. I mean, I'm not buying that argument. At least I'm questioning that argument.
Tell me how.
But first, I've got a question for you about whether there is a claim regarding the individual security guard. Mm-hmm. And is there a claim against that guard? I know he's not, or she is not identified as a party, but is that part of your claims?
We have not made a specific claim that an individual security guard failed to keep Alex in the facility. That person is unnamed. Now, it is true that Alex said that on his way out, he made eye contact with a security guard. But as the court pointed out earlier, that is the only testimony regarding such an interaction. This guard has never been identified.
But you're not making a claim of that the county is liable because of the actions of this individual security guard. Is that right?
Well, we have made the claim that the county failed to keep Alex in the facility, and we've made a number of claims based on failures of security. Now, that, of course, is going to encompass individuals because individuals carry that out. But in terms of this particular person, we are not making a specific claim that this particular person failed to take certain action as to Alex Aguilar. In fact, there is, I don't even know who this person is. And while counsel has indicated that this person was deposed, and we did depose certain security personnel, that individual has never been identified. And not only has he not been identified, and as the court pointed out, what that person would was or was not thinking or did not do has never been identified and is only the subject of speculation based on a snippet of testimony from Mr. Aguilar, who was being completely honest. And I would argue that the Welters versus Minnesota Department of Correction case, which says that when predicate facts are in dispute, and at a minimum, these facts are in dispute, the court cannot determine whether official immunity applies here. So while we do certainly make allegations of failures of security, there is certainly no way that we can point to or boil this down to an unnamed individual and ask the court to impose immunity or official immunity based on such actions. That's our position.
Okay. So let's look at one of your claims is that the county did not do enough to recover Mr. Aguilar after he eloped. So how is that just operational as opposed to a discretionary policy decision?
Well, there is no doubt, and it is admitted in, you know, 16 different depositions virtually, that Mr. Aguilar should not have been allowed to leave the facility. Everybody agrees. Not supposed to leave the facility. The order says he's not supposed to leave the facility. Furthermore, there is at least the written policy of AICDC, although again, it's an AICDC policy because there is no Hennepin County policy, and that the standard of care requires, and our experts have opined, the standard of care requires that when an individual such as this elopes, almost immediately, it becomes incumbent upon the facility to try and get him back because those first few minutes, those first few half hour.
So what kind of effort? I mean, that seems to me to be a discretionary decision of how to go about that and a policy decision. What kind of resources are they going to call in the National Guard? Are they going to start an Amber Alert? Are they going to, you know, tell the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office to stop what they're doing and everybody's supposed to look for, I mean, and I'm not trying to diminish the tragedy of what happened here. It's a very, very sad situation. But how is that not a discretionary decision of how to recover an individual once they've eloped?
Well, again, decisions can involve discretion without triggering immunity. I think that's well established by the courts here in Minnesota.
And what case law are you relying on? Why don't you help me out here? Because I'm just trying to follow your argument.
Let me grab my handy flashcards here. Here it goes. The Toussignant decision, Toussignant versus St. Louis County, in which the court says a ministerial act can still involve an exercise of judgment. And I know that in our brief, we cited a number of cases that indicate the same thing. And I would argue that here, while there may be a number of ways in which to try and get Alex back, they took no effort at all. And I think that incumbent upon the county is to make an effort, and that effort would be executional. How they decide to do that, there are decisions they could certainly make differently. They can send, you know, whether they call the police, whether they send their own people. There are definitely different ways to do.
Were called. Minneapolis Police Department was called by AI. Continue on with your argument. I don't want to belabor this, and I appreciate your responses. They've helped clarify it for me, so thank you.
And I just might add, the police were called 2.5 hours later, and so one could argue, sure, can you decide to call it in the first minute, the 6th minute, the 8th minute, and is there discretion involved in making that decision? Sure, but is that the kind of discretion that triggers immunity? I would argue that it is not. I would like to address a couple of other things, if I can, with regard to the issue of statutory immunity. Now, in the position of respondent, of course, since we don't get to write a written brief in response to the appellant's reply, I'd like to address a couple of things, if I may, from the reply. There were two admissions in the reply, and I think reinforced here earlier today when Ms. Carey was speaking. One, the county acknowledges that of the more than 11 different allegations in this complaint, only one of them did they challenge has to do with official individual immunity. Everything else, they seem to indicate and agree, falls under the allegations that would apply under a concept, if there is immunity, would apply under a concept of statutory immunity. Secondly, it appears that the county admits that those other 10 allegations or so are all operational, but the county seems to be taking the position it's not our job because we've contracted with AICDC to handle those operational issues. But I would contend, Your Honors, is that if those allegations, including the training, including identification clothing, the fixing the cameras, which by the way is never mentioned in any of the briefing, or any of the other things that we allege, the failures that we allege, were operational, then those items cannot be the basis for statutory immunity. In fact, as the court, I think, pointed out earlier, Judge Moore determined, and the case law is pretty clear, or at least that there is no case law cited that indicates that you can't have immunity simply because you contract away, or not away, but you enter into a contract with AICDC to perform certain functions. We've alleged six different ways in which the county has separate ways in which the county has its own duty of care. But the bottom line is, this is not an issue that's before this court. Whether that contract absolves or insulates the county is an issue regarding its negligence. It's an issue for the trier of fact, and it is an issue that has been resolved by the lower court. And it is not the subject of an interlocutory appeal in this case. And I think that it takes us away from the core issues, which are the allegations of misconduct, the kind of thing that would trigger statutory duty. And if we're acknowledging that they're not, then the issue of the contract becomes a red herring for purposes of this appeal. Now, a trier of fact may determine whether or not that contract absolves the Hennepin County of its responsibility. And we would argue, of course, that it doesn't, but that's not before this court.
So can I ask secondly, you just a quick question? I'm sorry to interrupt again. But your claims in this case against the county are based on its own direct liability and also vicarious liability for AICDC, or is it just direct?
The claims against the county are largely direct for their own failures. I think Your Honor mentioned the custodian earlier. And we would certainly argue that that was an individual who was an agent of the county. And we are not saying that the folks at AICDC are not agents of the county. I agree with Your Honor that they certainly would be agents of the county, whether the contract says differently or otherwise. They're the ones who they've contracted or who they brought in to do what they're supposed to do under the statute. But that doesn't absolve the county of its responsibility. That's the point we're raising. So in answer to your question, yes, most of our allegations are directly against the county for its own action. If I can continue on with these, the two last points with regard to the statutory immunity. In the South, or the SW versus Spring Lake School District case, the first one, the 1988 case, it was made pretty clear that conduct flowing from a governmental entity's failure or refusal to enact a policy is conduct at an operational level. In every instance, the county has indicated that they didn't enact any policies whatsoever, that they had no policies for safety and elopement prevention whatsoever, that they did not mandate of their agents any policies for safety or elopement. They simply, and there is no evidence, and I'll touch upon this in a second, there is no evidence that they even thought about it or that they considered it. In this case, that automatically under the Spring Lake decisions would make those failures operational, even if we take everything else aside. Significantly also is the fact that there has been no evidence of any planning level determination with regard to the specific allegations in this complaint. And I point to, in contrast, the Magnolia 8 Properties case, which I believe, Judge Halbrooks, you were involved in directly with regard to its decision, where in that case, the municipality was charged with not properly repairing part of its infrastructure. And they showed very detailed accounts of the consideration to financial and economic planning and why they didn't get to it at the time. We have nothing like that in this particular case. So on, as far as the statutory immunity issue goes, there are at least three different or four different bases for why we can't have or should not have statutory immunity in this case. I see that my time is up, and I very much appreciate the opportunity to speak with all of you.
Thank you, Mr. Halpern. Ms. Brunko, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you. I just want to quickly address some of the points that Mr. Halpern raised. I want, on the SW case, SW was about was a suit against a school district for the operation of its own school. Again, Hennepin County, under the statute that's relevant here, had the option to choose to operate a detox facility or to maintain by contract. And it made the planning level decision to maintain that facility by contract. That's the statutory obligation. The civil commitment order here committed Mr. Aguilar to the State Commissioner of Human Services. And in that decision to contract for these services, Hennepin County relied on the bevy of state rules, regulations, and licensing requirements that its expert would be subject to in operating its facility. It did not formulate the additional policies that Mr. Halpern, and I'm sorry, that Mr. Aguilar has alleged against the county. And there is case law to support that formulation of policy is protected by statutory immunity. On the issue of official immunity, and I also just want to address quickly, I believe the way that Mr. Halpern phrased it was that the county is saying that the contract absolves it of liability here. Instead, the county is arguing that the contract is the best evidence of the planning level decision making of how to structure its program and how to work with its expert to make sure that this kind of detox facility was provided for Hennepin County residents.
I did not, on that point specifically, Ms. Brunko, I did not see that in your brief. Did I miss that?
That was in our reply brief in response to that argument.
And what is the evidence in the record to support that?
The evidence in the record to support that the contract is evidence of the planning level decision?
Yes.
The contract itself, that the two parties that have entered into an understanding with one another have memorialized that, and that it's signed by the county board, which is the decision maker of the county.
In that contract, though, there is a provision where the county, if it finds that the contractor is not performing adequately or is in danger, I can't remember the that's either safety in here someplace, but I don't have it right in front of me right now, that you can terminate the contract immediately. So isn't there a duty of oversight then on the part of the county even looking at the terms of the contract?
I would say that the county built in provisions to ensure that it was getting what it was paying for from its expert, and that it didn't, whether or not there's a duty would go to the merits of the medical negligence claim, but planning level decision, whether it be a bad decision to rely on the expert to operate its facility in accordance with state licensing rules and regulations, that that is entitled to statutory immunity. That's a planning level decision. A case to support that is Bloss. There was grievous injury. A young woman was sexually assaulted while being transported on a study abroad program. And even in a case where there was horrible injury, the court held that that a governmental entity that's deliberate in how it organizes a program, how that organization of the program is entitled to statutory immunity. As this court also recently held in the Lutsky case, it's unrealistic to expect an internal municipal policy to cover every contingency. The way that Hennepin County made the planning level decision to cover how a detox facility would be available to its residents was to contract with experts for the operation of that facility, and that's entitled to statutory immunity. On the issue of official and vicarious immunity, I want to say that SW was a case about how a school district operated its own school. Here we're back to a case of where Hennepin County has contracted for certain work. And there are policies in place. Those policies, as Mr. Halpern acknowledged, are AICDC's policies. AICDC did follow its policy when Mr. Aguilar left its facility and reported him to the Minneapolis Police Department. It did not report that he had left to the security guard that would be downstairs. I see that I'm out of time, but if I may briefly just address one more point.
Sure, just quickly.
Very quickly. As seen in the Jasperson case, where a young man, a 13-year-old boy, committed suicide, again, horrible, grievous situation, this court held that where the county could not have operationalized a policy, where the government entity could not have operationalized a policy, it did not play into whether or not official or vicarious immunity should attach. And here, because the county was unaware that Mr. Aguilar had left the AICDC facility, it could not have operationalized such a policy.
Thank you, both of you, very much. It is lots of overlapping matters at play here. So your arguments have been very helpful to us, and thank you. The case is now submitted, and we'll be issuing our decision within the statutory timeframe. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honors, very much.
Thank you very much.